The Story of Our Health Message, Chapter 6, The Vision at Otsego, Michigan. May 21, 1863, was an epical day in the history of Seventh-day Adventists. On that day there gathered in their meeting house in Battle Creek, Michigan, a group of 21 delegates representing about 3,500 believers. The conference had been called for the purpose of securing unity and efficiency in labor, and promoting the general interests of the cause of present truth, and of perfecting the organization of Seventh-day Adventists. A constitution for a general conference was adopted, and officers were elected. The executive committee of the general conference then began its work by looking over the field and recommending an equitable distribution of the few available workers, prepared for united action. By the effective linking together of local churches, state conferences, and the general conference, the way was now prepared for a far greater unity of action in the work of Seventh-day Adventists than had been possible while each church or section had been a unit in itself. We have seen that during the preceding 15 years several basic steps had been taken involving the discontinuance of tobacco and tea and coffee. The importance of cleanliness was stressed, and counsel had come in regard to the use of rich foods. By painstaking and persevering effort, ground had been gained on these preliminary points. In one instance, it will be recalled, reforms that we now recognize as right in themselves had been an occasion for confusion and controversy, because they were premature. The Lord had then sent messages of restraint addressed to zealous advocates of the non-use of swine's flesh. As though heaven had been waiting for the arrival of this propitious time for a united advance in temperance and godliness, the Spirit of God now spoke to the church through the prophetic gift by which it had received counsel and guidance all along the way. It was at the house of Brother A. Hilliard, at Otsego, Michigan, June 6, 1863, writes Mrs. Ellen G. White, that the great subject of health reform was opened before me in vision. This was less than 2 weeks after the adjournment of the General Conference. Elders R. J. Lawrence and M. E. Cornell were conducting 10 meetings in Otsego, and a company of believers showed their interest in the effort by driving up there from Battle Creek, a distance of about 30 miles, to pass the weekend. Among these were Elder James White and his wife. Worn with overwork and perplexity, and in feeble health, Elder White was much depressed in spirit. A memorable vision. At the beginning of the Sabbath, the family and visitors assembled for song and prayer. Of this prayer service and the memorable vision given at that time, one who was present has written. Sister White was asked to lead in prayer at family worship. She did so in a most wonderful manner. Elder White was kneeling a short distance from her. While praying, she moved over to him, and laying her hand on his shoulder continued praying for him until she was taken off in vision. She was in vision about 45 minutes. It was at this time she was given instruction upon the health question, which soon after became such a matter of interest to our people. Those present at the time this vision was given will never forget the heavenly influence that filled the room. The cloud passed from the mind of Elder White, and he was full of praise to God. During this revelation, Mrs. White was given much instruction for the church and also for her husband and herself as concerned their physical welfare. Testimonies for the Church 3:11-13. But the outstanding feature of the vision was the presentation to Mrs. White of the relation between physical welfare and spiritual health, or holiness. Upon her and her husband was placed the responsibility of leading out and educating the people who were preparing for eternal life, regarding the reforms they should make in their daily living. I saw that it was a sacred duty to attend to our health and arouse others to their duty. We have a duty to speak, to come out against intemperance of every kind, intemperance in working, in eating, in drinking, in drugging, and then point them to God's great medicine, water, pure soft water, for diseases, for health, for cleanliness, for luxury. I saw that we should not be silent upon the subject of health, but should wake up minds to the subject. Care of health a sacred duty. Through this vision, Mrs. White's prayer for her husband's recovery to health was answered, but not by immediate restoration. Rather, it was better answered by pointing out some of the causes for his weakness, and by emphasizing the importance of making the proper care of the health a religious duty. It is not safe nor pleasing to God, Mrs. White wrote, to violate the laws of health, and then ask him to take care of our health, and keep us from disease, when we are living directly contrary to our prayers. And further, I saw that it was duty for everyone to have a care for his health, but especially should we turn our attention to our health, and take time to devote to our health, that we may in a degree recover from the effects of overdoing and overtaxing the mind. The work God requires of us will not shut us away from caring for our health. The more perfect our health, the more perfect will be our labor. The injunction to Elder and Mrs. White that they were to give attention to their health was accompanied by practical instruction pointing out specific mistakes that they had made, and laying down great fundamental principles of general application. The bearing of heavy burdens, and the feeling that some of his brethren had failed to give him due cooperation in his arduous labors and responsibilities, had led Elder White into a condition of mental discouragement and depression. He was exhorted to exercise faith in God and to rise above these gloomy thoughts, for this state of mind was seriously affecting his health. Thus was laid down the broad principle that we should encourage a cheerful, hopeful, peaceful frame of mind, for our health depends upon our doing this. Another effect of intemperate labor was pointed out. When we tax our strength, overlabor, and weary ourselves much, then we take colds, and at such times are in danger of diseases taking a dangerous form. By precept and example, the duty to elevate by precept and example the principles of temperance and of health reform, by giving them a place with other saving truths, as an integral part of the message to prepare a people for Christ's coming. This is an outstanding feature of the vision relating to health, which was given at Otsego. The light that came resulted in reforms in the White household, and that light was to be passed on to others as a solemn obligation divinely laid upon them. In this memorable vision there was a presentation of basic principles which, although now established and accepted as scientific, were in advance of the general knowledge of the time. But the greatest value of the revelation lay not primarily in the enunciation of correct health principles. As has been pointed out, there were by 1863 various persons who were teaching reforms in living and in the care of the sick. The outstanding contribution of the instruction that came through the testimonies is the recognition that it is a part of religious duty to care for the body temple. Elder J. Schweigener, in clarifying this point, well said, "We do not profess to be pioneers in the general principles of the health reform. The facts on which this movement is based have been elaborated, in a great measure, by reformers, physicians, and writers on physiology and hygiene, and so may be found scattered through the land. But we do claim that by the method of God's choice it has been more clearly and powerfully unfolded, and is thereby producing an effect which we could not have looked for from any other means. As mere physiological and hygienic truths, they might be studied by some at their leisure, and by others laid aside as of little consequence. But when placed on a level with the great truths of the third angel's message by the sanction and authority of God's Spirit, and so declared to be the means whereby a weak people may be made strong to overcome, and our diseased bodies cleansed and fitted for translation, then it comes to us as an essential part of present truth, to be received with the blessing of God, or rejected at our peril." The source of Mrs. White's counsel. This clear statement by one of the pioneers of Seventh-day Adventists was published in the church organ at the time when the health reform was just beginning to be agitated among them. The fact that there were at that time reformers who were doing commendable work in writing and lecturing on health principles was readily and openly acknowledged. That fact was not left for the discovery of critics many years later, who might thereby assume that Mrs. White merely copied from others in her advocacy of health principles. However, we have positive statements both from Mrs. White and from Elder White that at the time the vision was given they had not made a study of the writings of others. Mrs. White further testifies that she had completed the writing of her initial articles before she read the writings of others upon the subject. Although the statement anticipates some of the history which will be traced later, her testimony regarding this should be given here. What she wrote was in answer to the direct question, "Did you receive your views upon health reform before visiting the Health Institute at Dansville, New York, or before you had read works upon that subject?" The reply was as follows. "It was at the house of Brother A. Hilliard, at Otsego, Michigan, June 6, 1863, that the great subject of health reform was opened before me in vision. I did not visit Dansville till August 1864, 14 months after I had the view. I did not read any works upon health until I had written Spiritual Gifts, Volumes 3 and 4, Appeal to Mothers, and had sketched out most of my 6 articles in the 6 numbers of How to Live. I did not know that such a paper existed as The Laws of Life, published at Dansville, New York. I had not heard of the several works upon health, written by Dr. J.C. Jackson, and other publications at Dansville. At the time, I had the view named above. As I introduced the subject of health to friends where I labored in Michigan, New England, and in the state of New York, and spoke against drugs and flesh meats, and in favor of water, pure air, and a proper diet, the reply was often made, "You speak very nearly the opinions taught in the Laws of Life, and other publications, by Drs. Trawl, Jackson, and others. Have you read that paper and those works?" My reply was that I had not, either should I read them till I had fully written out my views, lest it should be said that I had received my light upon the subject of health from physicians and not from the Lord. And after I had written my 6 articles for How to Live, I then searched the various works on hygiene, and was surprised to find them so nearly in harmony with what the Lord had revealed to me. And to show this harmony, and to set before my brethren and sisters the subject as brought out by able writers, I determined to publish How to Live, in which I largely extracted from the works referred to. I was astonished. She wrote of this at another time, at the things shown me in vision. Many things came directly across my own ideas. Elder White's testimony. A statement made by Elder James White a year and a half after the vision further confirms the assertion that prior to the vision of June 6, 1863, either he nor his wife had read extensively on health subjects, nor had their attention been called to the good work being done by others in that field. Elder White wrote, 18 months since, we resolved to read up on the subject of health, as we could find time, and sent to the Dansville, New York, publishing house for an assortment of their works, that might cost from $10 to $25. Then we knew not the name of a single publication offered for sale at that house. We heard from reliable sources that there was something valuable there, and resolved to put in for a share. That these books were received by Elder White after, and not before, June 6th is indisputable. For a letter from Dr. J.C. Jackson, in reply to this request for health literature from Dansville, New York, is dated August 13, 1863. The doctor apologizes for the long delay in answering due to absence from home for some time, and great pressure of business after my return. The vision created the interest that led Elder James White, on learning of the work carried forward by Dr. Jackson, to desire to know what he and others were doing in the field of reform. But as explained by Mrs. White, other health publications were not read by her until she had completed writing out the instruction that God had given to her. Remarks by Dr. H.S. Lay. About 2 weeks after the vision, Mrs. White was visiting in Allegan, Michigan, where lived a Seventh-day Adventist physician who for some years had practiced medicine. During a ride with this Dr. H.S. Lay, Mrs. White related to him some of the principles pertaining to health as she had seen them. A few days later, at his home, the doctor asked her to relate that portion of the vision more fully. Regarding this interview, her son, W.C. White, who was present, has written, "Although the time was propitious, mother responded very reluctantly to this request. She said that she was not familiar with medical language, and that much of the matter presented to her was so different from the commonly accepted views that she feared she could not relate it so that it would be understood." Dr. Lay pleaded, "Tell us what you have been shown, and see if we can understand it." Then mother told in simple language what she had seen. This conversation in Dr. Lay's home continued for 2 hours. It covered comprehensively the fundamentals of the great truths that have led to our health reform movement. Dr. Lay was profoundly impressed by the factual accuracy of the principles of physiology, hygiene, diet, and therapeutics that lay at the foundation of what Mrs. White related as having been shown her in vision. He knew that her knowledge of these principles had not been acquired from human sources of information. He frequently related these circumstances to others. At the General Conference of 1897, a well-known physician said, "It is a very interesting fact that the Lord began giving us this light 30 years ago. Just before I came to the conference, I had a talk with Dr. Lay, and he told me of how he heard the first instruction about health reform away back in 1860, and especially in 1863. While he was riding in a carriage with Brother and Sister White, she related what had been presented to her upon the subject of health reform, and laid out the principles which have stood the test of all these years, a whole generation." And Dr. Kellogg added, "As a basis for his own confidence in the sound health principles as consistently set forth by Mrs. White, it is impossible for any man who has not made a special study of medicine to appreciate the wonderful character of the instruction that has been received in these writings. It is wonderful, brethren, When you look back over the writings that were given us 30 years ago, and then perhaps the next day pick up a scientific journal and find some new discovery that the microscope has made, or that has been brought to light in the chemical laboratory, I say, it is perfectly wonderful how correctly they agree in fact. There is not a single principle in relation to the healthful development of our bodies and minds that is advocated in these writings from Sister White, which I am not prepared to demonstrate conclusively from scientific evidence, given by the author of Truth. The fact that there was agreement in many points between Mrs. White's writings on health and the teachings of certain pioneers in the health reform field opens the way for the skeptic to attempt to discredit her by asserting that the writings of those physicians and physiologists really constituted the source of her information, and that she blasphemously claimed to have received such as divine revelation. But the documentary evidence does not support such assertions. The information that came to her from the author of Truth was bound to be in agreement with such truths as had been discovered by others. She declares that not until after she had fully written out her views did she read the current writings of the doctors who were teaching advanced health principles. And she gives as the reason, "Lest it should be said that I had received my light upon the subject of health from physicians and not from the Lord." A similar claim to having received truth by divine inspiration was made by the Apostle Paul. "I certify you, brethren," he wrote, "that the gospel which was preached of me is not after man. For I neither received it of man, neither was I taught it, but by the revelation of Jesus Christ." The fact that there was perfect agreement between the gospel that Paul preached and that which was earlier taught by the apostles gave ample opportunity for his opponents to assert that he received from them the doctrines that he taught. For some of his contemporaries had taught the same things before he accepted them. It might have been pointed out that he had heard the impressive discourse of Stephen. But unless we are to brand the Apostle Paul as an impostor, we must believe him when he declared that he received the truths of Christianity by revelation. The truth of this claim is strengthened by Paul's manifest insight into the vital truths of the gospel in advance of any presentation by others prior to his call to the ministry. Likewise, in the hundreds of pages written by Mrs. White on the subject of health, there is much more than a reproduction of the ideas of the health reformers then living. In some instances, indeed, she positively differed with them. Under divine guidance, she took these revealed truths and wrought them into the warp and woof of the Advent message as an aid to attaining that holiness of character to which those are called who expect to be translated at the coming of Jesus Christ.